And now, from the news of the day to a special pre-recorded abbreviated edition of the Insight segment. So we will not be taking your calls tonight. Well, holiday shopping is finally over. That's probably a good thing for many of us. But how did it impact your wallet? As we head into the new year, you should have a checklist concerning your finances. Our guest tonight will be offering some financial advice. We're talking about your money, and that is important. Our guest tonight is Michelle Singletary. She's a personal financial columnist with the Washington Post and author of What to Do with Your Money When Crisis Hits, a survival guide. It's just one of a couple of Michelle's books, but we highlight that, but we'll be sure to talk about the other books, so they always deal with your money. Michelle, thank you so much for joining us once again.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So let's talk about holiday shopping. I have to say that it really can be stressful. You want to do the right thing, right? Get your loved ones all of the things that they want, all of the things that you'd like to give them. But if your money is tight, it just causes stress. I have been there. I'm probably still there. What should we have been thinking about, first of all, when we were out shopping for gifts? And some people are still doing it post-Christmas.
That's right. Like, people couldn't get things that they wanted because of the supply chain issues. And then they know there are going to be sales. And so they were shopping afterwards, knowing that people are okay receiving their gifts late. You know, I always tell people, this is something I've been saying for years and years, even before the pandemic, that particularly if you have a lot of debt, student loan debt, credit card debt, or you don't have an emergency fund, that you need to be, you know, authentic to yourself in your financial situation. And so keep this in mind, whether it's the Christmas or Kwanzaa or someone's birthday or anniversary, your presence matters more than the presents with an S. And by that I mean, you know, this pandemic taught us one important thing, that we just wanted to be with our folks. We wanted to wrap our arms around them and hug them and be in their presence. And so that's what's important. And you can't buy love. You know, you're either there for people or you're not. And I just want people to realize that you don't have to go overboard. You don't have to go past your budget, and you certainly shouldn't be spending if you don't have all those things that I mentioned before. If you don't have an emergency fund, if you have a lot of debt and you're not making progress in paying it down, that you've got to remember that the most important thing, the gift that you can give yourself and your family, is to be financially stable.
Is that easier said than done, Michelle? Is there even more pressure on us during the holidays to spend what we don't have? And I know you have talked about this, that's a problem. We spend what we don't have. But is it even more ramped up during the holidays?
It absolutely is. I mean, everywhere you look, it's like, buy this, show them your love, you know, treat them. You know, have all these car commercials with cars in the driveway with a huge bow, and people like, oh, I got a car, which is, to me, the most ridiculous thing ever, especially if you're married. Like, if my husband gave me a car, quote unquote, I would be like, dude, what is wrong with you?
We need would to you take it back?
This. You need to take this back. It really is hard. I understand that it's very hard. And it's easier for me to say because I'm a lifelong penny pincher, and so I've never had this whole big issue about trying to show people, you know, how much I love them by the things that I buy. And I understand that many people's love language is giving. They love to give. Mm-hmm. With that understanding, but I'm telling you, and it's really why I wrote the book that you mentioned at the top of the segment, you know, What to Do with Your Money When Crisis Hits, because we never know when the next financial crisis is coming. And trust me, there will be another one. We're in the middle of it now. We'll get past
I was going to ask you, Michelle, is this a crisis with COVID-19 financially? We think of health, right? But sort of box this in terms of what it means financially for most of us, many of us, maybe all of us.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think there really were the haves and the have-nots for this pandemic. And so the haves did exceptionally well. They kept their jobs. Lots of them were able to work from home, so they reduced a lot of their expenses. You know, things were locked down for a while. We probably are going to go into another lockdown if we can't get these COVID cases down. And so there's less opportunity to spend eating out. That's a big place where people lost a lot of money. And so those folks did well. They were able to save. They were able to get rid of debt. You know, I run a ministry at my church, First Baptist Church of Glen Arden. It's a financial ministry, year-long program. And this past year, for 2021, the people who participated in this ministry from last January to the end of the year got rid of more than $1.25 million during the pandemic.
Whoa.
So over $1 million following the principles that we taught them. So clearly there were some people who were doing fine. They had enough that they could get rid of. I mean, that's an amazing amount of debt. And every session is about 150 to 200 people. So, you know, and that's just people who told us about it. There were other people who were getting rid of debt who didn't testify about it. So those were the haves. But the have-nots were folks who lost their jobs, or their hours were reduced. And now we see that more people's hours are being reduced as stores have to close up because employees are getting COVID. And even if you were not impacted, somebody you know was impacted. I know in my family, my husband and I did well. He works for the government. I work for the folks. We did well. But we had some relatives who did not. And so because we are great savers, we were able to help out some relatives who were not doing so well, you know, pay their rent for a couple of months. And so that's what I mean by when a crisis hits, because it might not impact you directly, but you want to position yourself so that you've got the funds to help family members and your community and your church and the world, really, when a crisis hits.
What you do, it's so important, not only what you do with the posts and what you do with your books, but really what you do with your ministry at your church, which my mother goes to. I have to ask her if she's been to your session, by the way, because she is a penny pincher. I don't know if she's listening, but she is tight with her money. So I don't know if she needs to go to your session, but
well, you know
she probably could even she could offer some advice.
She could be a money mentor to someone. So
yes.
Please invite her to come, because we have that.
Without a doubt.
Do.
I'll mention that to her. But my question is, from your standpoint, have you had to adjust on how you advise based on the pandemic, or is most of your advice that you give in terms of money, holding on to it, how to invest it, pretty linear across the board no matter what?
You know what? The advice is timeless. And that's what the beauty of the basics about financial does not change whether the economy is doing bad or worse. What changes is what, you know, people go into crisis mode. That changes. But the principles of how to do this thing never really changes. And what are the basic principles? Well, of course, you already told you that I'm a church member. So first to me, it's like, you know, you tithe. And then after that, you know, you make sure that you've got a cushion no matter what. But I'm going to tell you, the hardest time I had to get people to save and do this stuff when they actually have money. In good times, people think it's going to last forever. And I'm arguing with them, you need to save more. Oh, I got a job. My wife got a job. We good. We good. I can't get them to save. I can't get them to see down the road. It's harder to get them to do the right thing when times are good. Now it's actually pretty easy because they see why they need to have that emergency fund and why they need to pay down their debt. So I'm actually, it was a good time for me because I didn't have to beg people to do the right thing because they were in the middle of it. My problem is when we come out of this, and we will, you know, then I'm going to go right back to arguing with people and trying to convince them that they need to have savings and fussing at them, and they're thinking that I'm crazy because everything's going well. You know, everything goes well as long as it goes well. And it's when it doesn't that you realize you have regrets. And I'm trying to get fewer and fewer people to have financial regrets and to set themselves up so that when a crisis hits, they can weather it. Now, some crisis it doesn't matter how much money you have, unless you're the richest person in the world, you might go through all of your savings. But I'm telling you, you'll be grateful that you had it and you could last for as long as you could rather than not having it at all and really fall, you know, getting evicted or, you know, all the kinds of things that happened during the pandemic.
January 1st, 2021, we start making declarations. I'm sure many of us, what we want to do with our money, how we want to save, you know, where we want to invest it. Now it's December 21st, 2021. We're only 3 or 4 days short of the year ending. Are there some things that we should or still can do in the last few days of the year with our money that might be beneficial for us for the tax year, or just things that maybe we haven't been doing, but we've got 4 days to squeeze it in, or is it too little too late?
Right. Well, for some people, it is a little late, but let's say you got a year-end bonus and you weren't really, you know, putting enough in your retirement fund, your 401k or TSP, then I would say go ahead and put that money in there before the end of the year. You know, boost your savings for your retirement account. That's one thing. Because I know you're thinking, oh, I want to, you know, splurge, but just think about it. Have you been saving enough towards your retirement? And then secondly, you know, if you are a giver this year only, because it ends this year for 2021, you can give to a charitable, a nonprofit that is approved by the IRS, and get a tax deduction even if you don't itemize. So normally you can't take a charitable donation unless you itemize. But this year only, if you're an individual or married filing as a single, you can take up to $300 off your taxes for a charitable donation. For couples, it's $600. So whether you itemize or not, so if you're going to take the standard deduction, you still get to take that charitable deduction. And lots of people don't realize that. So that's a good thing. Some charity could benefit from you. You know, Howard, you know, your station, NPR, you know, your church, you know, some food bank. You can give money to them before the end of the year, and you can take that off your taxes. Again, up to $300 if you're an individual, up to $600 if you're a couple. You know, if you've got time and you need to look at your, you know, portfolio, and if you've had some losses and you want to balance it with some gains, you can do that. It's a little bit more sophisticated. And then this may not sound like something that important, but this is a good time before the tax season starts to just sit down and look at what happened to your finances for this past year. You know,
that can be scary, Michelle.
Scary. I know, right? I got my money together.
Sometimes we don't want to look back, though, do we?
You know, you don't.
We're afraid to really look at what we did and what we should not have been doing. Would that be true? Is it sometimes you're avoiding really looking at the things that you know that you did wrong and that you shouldn't have done, and things that you spent money on?
It's very hard to look back because people feel guilty. They want to put their head in the sand, you know, as the saying goes. And you know, the truth of the matter is people want to do the right thing, and they know they haven't. And when you look back, it makes you realize that you didn't do some things that you should. And people feel guilty, and they don't want to have that feeling. But I always say it's like when you're driving a car. You know, you've got a rear-view mirror, and you've got the glass up front so you can see out, and you've got a side mirror. Why do you got all those mirrors, right? Because you've got to have that 360 viewpoint, right? You got to look back and see what's coming, right? You got to make sure everything's clear and maybe look out for the cop. You know, if you tend to speed, you want to check that out. You're looking up front because you want to see what's coming ahead. You want to position yourself. If you see those red lights down the road, you know you need to slow down. That's sort of like looking at your debt picture. You see that you've accumulated a lot of debt. You're looking forward. You're thinking, I need to stop and slow down, just as if you saw those red lights. And the side mirror, you want to see what's coming up, because sometimes things come up and you don't even see it. So that's why you always have to glance at that side mirror before you change lanes, right? You're supposed to look to see. And that's what you have to do with your finances. Just sort of anticipate something being there, even if it's not there already, right? Because you don't want to be sideswiped. And so think about it that way. And it's the same way with driving. You don't want to have an accident. You got to look forward. You got to look back. And you got to look on the side. You got to do the same thing with your money. And if you don't, you're going to crash.
Well, let's look forward now, and hope that we're good drivers.
Right.
And so, if we are, what questions should we be asking ourselves regarding financial goals? Is there, if we're talking to ourselves, what should we be asking? And I know it's sort of sometimes shaped to the individual, but as you mentioned, there's some baseline things I'm assuming that you should be thinking about and asking yourself as you set your goals for the new year.
I love that question. And in fact, when I sit down with individuals and go over their budget, and my husband does too as part of our ministry, and just privately we help friends and family. Do you know one of the things that we do? We don't even look at the numbers. We don't crunch anything yet. We spend a great deal of time, sometimes up to an hour or two, telling them, list your goals. And don't worry about what comes first or second. Just what do you want out of your financial life? And we have to list, you know, up to 10 or 12 goals. Just what do you want to do? Just as if you can do it all. And then we have them go back, and then we have them number them. What's your number one? Of all these things that you listed, what's really the thing that you want to accomplish in the coming year? And usually it's pay off debt or save more. And then I said, what's the next thing? And somebody, oh, I want to take a vacation. Well, is that number two? Or do you think you're going to have to maybe move that down to number five? Because that's so key to look at it all, the good and the bad, right? So that's why we don't say, oh, you must save, you must get rid of debt. Just what do you want to do with your money? And then you prioritize it, because you can end up taking that vacation and not going into debt for it if you handle some other things that are a bit of a higher priority, like getting out of debt. And so it's so important to set goals, because listen, finances don't happen by good financial situations. It doesn't happen by accident. You got to be purposeful for it. And and I tell you, and you know, I always like to tell people, listen, I didn't come from money. I was abandoned as a kid. Lived with my grandmother. She worked as a nursing assistant. Didn't make more than about $13,000 a year. My grandfather was an alcoholic. He didn't always bring his money home. So I'm not somebody who comes from money trying to tell you how to make money. You know, I know what it's like to actually be hungry. But I've gone through all of those stages from not having anything, from being, you know, okay, to being middle class, to being upper middle class. So I've covered the bases. I have taken care of a disabled brother. I have a child who's special needs. I've covered it all. And so I'm telling you this from my experience, that it's so important to plan and look and set goals, and you can achieve it. We are working with our young, my husband and I have three children, all in their, you know, early 20s. We are working with them now to set up life goals for their retirement. And my oldest, she's the one who's finished school, finished her graduate degree. You know, she's got her first job. We made sure she signed up for her workplace retirement account. She's saving 15% of her pay. We actually set her up with a non-retirement investment account because she wants to buy her first car with cash. We gave her a little, you know, car when she was a teenager. And so she doesn't ever want to have any car debt. And the way we have trained her, none of our children will ever have to have any car debt for the entire of their adult lives, because they keep the cars, they save that money, then they can buy a car with cash, and then what? And they still save that money so the next time they need a car. And so, and guess what? This 20-something who's not making that much money, right? She's going to be a millionaire by the time she retires. No question. No question.
Isn't that the one that said to you? And I thought you might have told me this story. Either I read it where you wrote where your daughter had said, "Well, Mom, why are you always so tight about everything that we spend money on?" Is this the same one?
That's the same one.
Okay. Because as you were talking, I'm going,
oh,
she's come a long way.
I don't know, she's about 7 or 8, and I was trying to get her to, you know, save some money, do some stuff, and she's like, I'm only 7, why do I have to know all this money? And I said to her, and I got down, and, you know, level to her, and I said, listen, it's my full-time job to make sure you're a good steward over your money. And then she says, you know, well, can you make it your part-time job?
Well, she's quick.
She's quick with it, right. But listen, she now knows, she understands, and she's not pushing back now, because this chick is going to have some money. And we're just thrilled that they're all good money managers.
Well, Michelle Singletary, there's so much more that we could talk about. And as I said at the top, this is an abbreviated version of our Insight segment. So we definitely have to have you back for a full segment. I've got so many more questions to ask you. But even in the short time that we had you, your advice is so invaluable. And we thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. And happy holidays. And I hope you just have a wonderful new year.
Thank you so much. She is Michelle Singletary, personal financial columnist with The Washington Post and author of What to Do with Your Money When Crisis Hits, A Survival Guide. That's The Daily Drum for this Monday, December 27th. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Have a fantastic night.